Hello, everybody.
HomoHomo.tv begins right now.
And I am your host, Nicholas Snow, the original Promo Homo. And with me in the studio, you're going to meet him in a minute, but I'm going to show you him right there. That is Clifton Tatum. He was the former Mr. Palm Springs Leather. He made it all the way to the International Mr. Leather Contest. And in the headline, I say he exposes himself once again, because he did actually expose himself to me in many interviews, and we're going to expose him to you. And he brought props. My goodness, he brought props. So let me get ready for this, which I think you'll enjoy right now. Let's put some TV in your Facebook.
PromoHomo.tv begins right now. Simulcast on Blog Talk Radio and Facebook Live, which basically means this is a worldwide television show that you can watch from any internet-connected device, and you can call in. How cool is that? The show is made possible with the generous support of Desert Ace Project, Lulu California Bistro, 849 Restaurant and Lounge, and we're a proud media sponsor of the LGBT Community Center of the Desert, Palm Springs Pride, and numerous other organizations and causes. For more about our sponsors and those we support, visit promohomo.tv. And now, on with the snow, show.
Yes, on with the snow, here I am. It is, what is today? It's Thursday, June 1st at 10 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time in the year 2016. And I'm very excited you've joined me, and I'm very excited that my friend Clifton Tatum is with us. And here he is right now. Clifton, how are you?
Great, how you doing?
I'm fantastic. So you made an interesting comment about how you've milked your 15 minutes of fame, or that it keeps going on.
Yes, I'm thinking it's so nice to be with you again. And my time has passed, and we have Christopher Durbin, Mr. Palm Springs Leather 2016, who just got back from IML, I believe, the night before last.
Do you know how he did?
He did quite well. He made the top 20. I'm very proud of him. In fact, the whole Palm Springs Leather community is very proud of him.
Oh, how nice is that? I knew that at some point I would get you into my apartment.
I knew you would. Yeah, the universe working behind you.
So, I know a lot about you, so this could be this interview can, you know, we can cover a lot of ground.
Mm-hmm.
And let me actually bring up a different screen on my computer in case people are calling in. And I want to let people see the call-in number there, which is on your screen now. This is a live call-in show. So you can call in at if you're watching live, at +1, that's the country code, 347-215-8866. You can call in, or you can chat. So we have Veronica from Thailand. It's Wednesday. It's not Thursday. Mike Williams lets me know it. No, wait a second. Today is Wednesday. Yeah, it's Wednesday. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. See, people are correcting me while I'm on the air. I was up until after 3 a.m. working on deadlines, and that was not many hours ago. So thank you for that, Mike Williams. All right. So I can see when we have live calls. We don't yet. So let's go back to you, Clifton. One of the things that I think is fascinating with you is that you came out fairly late in life.
Yes, 40.
So, and you weren't aware, I guess, well into your 20s that you were gay. So tell me about your sort of self-discovery regarding your sexual orientation.
My self-discovery was at the age of 40. When I met someone whom I knew was gay, but at the time he wasn't available and I wasn't available.
You were married.
Yes. And so was he. And so it was, it started off as a friendship, but we met in a gay venue. And although I was curious...
How did you end up being in the gay venue as a straight married man who was not yet in touch with yourself?
Because I was curious.
Oh, you were exploring.
It's, you know, and it's so funny because people say, oh, I was curious. To me, when someone says that, it's kind of like I know that there's an interest, but I don't know if I want to pursue the interest. It's like checking out a nice foreign sports car, but saying I would never buy it. I just want to see what it feels like.
No, I know what you're talking about. I mean, I came out in my very early 20s.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have used the word curious, but I knew I felt compelled to explore more, so I would know.
Yeah. Well, it was one of those situations where in my life I felt like at the time, I didn't have to be gay because there was nothing to compare my marriage to. And then when I met someone and I had fallen in love, I realized there was a different passion with this gentleman that I had with women.
So a whole different level.
A whole different level.
It's like you were fully alive again at a different level.
Right.
I want to say hello to Kun Emmy in Bangkok. So we have two people watching from Thailand. People want to shout out and let us know where you're calling from. That would be great. So how did you realize, oh, yes, I am gay, I mean, when you got into your curiosity? And hello, LaWayne. LaWayne is an author. He's tuned in. He's a really great guy. Thank you for watching, LaWayne. Hey, LaWayne, if you would comment about the name of your book, I will just give you a shout-out on the air, and, of course, you're welcome to come on the show. When did you realize, all right, I am gay, this is the new me, or the person that's always been that I've discovered, and what's next?
I would say I was at a gay bar, and it was also a nightclub, disco, circuit party venue, and I just felt so alive. I was having so much fun. I let down all my guards. I didn't have any kind of preconceived notions. I just went with the feeling, and the feeling felt real. And then when I was with this man, the first time he had gone off without me, I realized a rage of jealousy had come over me and passion that I had never felt before. I thought I belonged with him. That's where I was supposed to be. You know, I needed to get out of my marriage. I needed to move on with my life. And that was my truth. And it took a long time to get to that place. You don't just say that overnight. You have it's a coming to Jesus kind of meeting and acknowledging who you are.
So, you know, we have some similar, I think any coming out story. Hey, hello to Joseph who's tuned in. So now we have people watching from Santa Monica, from Thailand, and LaWayne lives in another state. We have people watching all over the world right now. And people are pressing the like button, so these bubbles are popping up on the window on my screen. I had a 2-year very intense relationship with a girlfriend in late high school and early college, and we ended up breaking up for different reasons, not because I was aware that I might be bisexual. Then I saw the movie Making Love, which was a brilliant film about a man that leaves his Harry Hamlin played the character, and he leaves his marriage.
Sure.
For another man, and Kate Jackson plays the wife that gets left. So I felt like I owed it to myself to find out who I was before I got into a relationship. Of course, you didn't have the opportunity to have that self-discovery. By the way, LaWayne's book is called Peeling Back the Layer, A Story of Trauma, Grace, and Triumph. You can find it at LaWayneChildry.com. And LaWayne, you can actually post that link in a separate post. And he remembers the movie Making Love. So you ended up married well into a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
How did you end up, it's called Layers. LaWayne, just correct your post and people can see it there. So how did you tell your wife?
Well, the marriage was going south. And so the divorce had already taken place. It was a year after the divorce that I explained to her my lack of interest in trying to salvage the marriage that was going bad. You know, we both weren't happy, so it was something that easily transitioned out.
My friend and yours, I believe, David Powell, He says, did you get rejected or judged by any of your longtime friends when you came out?
You know, what made it easy for me is that I had taken a job promotion with the Department of Corrections, and I moved out of my community. And when I moved out of my community, my wife had stayed back in our old community. So I was a new person whom they knew I was married, but I was living very single until she joined me, and that's when our marriage came apart. But I was living in a whole new town with all new friends, and so the majority of people, by the time my wife joined me and we separated, didn't really know me as a married person. They just knew me as a single person. So then when I came out as gay, well, it all kind of made sense.
I'm going to actually show off some photos from your reign as Mr. Palm Springs Leather. And before I do that, I'm going to queue up the photos. I'm not going to show them yet. There, I'm ready for that. So the other thing I think is really interesting to you is that, as a gay man, I personally have been attracted to sort of a man's man type of guy. So there would be, and I think this is probably a theme within the leather community. I'm not in the leather community. So Luwain's book is Peeling Back the Layers, a story of trauma, grace, and triumph at LuwainChildry.com. So I was, you know, when my fantasies would, well, as a teenager, my fantasies would clearly be about older men and men in uniform, other guys who are athletic, these sort of intense masculine scenarios. And what I think is fascinating about you is you awakened to your sexuality at the age of 40, but you worked in the Department of Corrections almost your entire adult life.
Yes.
So I know you worked with youth, basically.
Yeah, 18 to 25-year-olds.
Right. So, and you're not typically attracted to guys in their 20s, but your colleagues must have been the type of people that you would have been attracted to. So I'm curious, during those 15, 20, how many years?
30.
Or during those 30 years with the Department of Corrections, you never got attracted to or turned on by these colleagues in the Department of Corrections?
It's funny you're saying that. In my mind, I was in relationships with women from the time I was a kid. Been married twice, lived with many girls, had girlfriends. So the imagery of attractive men was just that. They looked good. They looked sexually appealing. But it never went any further than just looking. I never pursued a physical relationship, never had an interest in pursuing a physical relationship. I guess because my life was being fulfilled in other ways with my, you know, relationships with women, that it wasn't until there was a break at the age of 40 during that six-month period where I was living alone in another town that I just kind of said, well, let's explore. And then come to find out what I thought and what I was curious about was in reality my truth. But what made it, what delayed the whole thing was that I too was attracted to older men. So it wasn't until I became an older man that my peers was also my attraction. And then I didn't have an interest in feminine men. I liked the masculine man, the masculine imagery. So I guess as a kid, you know, you like Superman and you like Batman and you like these superheroes, but I didn't sexualize them. I just thought of them as big, attractive, powerful images. So when I did come out, of course, the leather community and the bear community was the first community I felt comfortable in. I felt a part of. Of course, when you're young, but when you're 40 and you go out to gay bars and you're around the 25-year-olds and 35-year-olds, I felt like I was back at work supervising young people. So there was no sexual energy there. You know what I mean? So I wasn't like I was in a crowd full of men my own age, my own peer group, that I realized this is where I belonged.
Okay, so this I have a broad audience comprised of people from all walks of life. For the novice, not someone that necessarily is looking to participate, but someone that just kind of has heard about it or does not know, what is the leather community?
Oh. We'll say leather kink community.
Leather kink.
Yeah, because not all people...
We're going to get kinky up in here.
not all kinky people wear leather, and not all leather people are what you would call BDSM. Bondage, discipline.
And sadomasochism.
Yeah.
Would you have known what the SM was if I didn't say it?
Oh, yeah.
Of course you would have. I know.
It tends to scare people, okay? The leather community is just simply a group of men who enjoy leather together, enjoy kink together, and they commiserate usually around a bar or leather events or leather gatherings or play parties or anything where they can get together. But you have to realize, you know, the leather men and kink people tend to be relegated to a small group. But you have to realize, according to our books and our law books and our history books, anytime two people do anything outside of their genitalia, it's kinky. Chocolate syrup, marshmallows, ice cream, fruit, bananas. That's kinky. So you don't have to get out whips and chains and fire and other toys of that nature to be considered kinky.
That's why. Move from whipped cream to whips.
Oh, yeah. From whipped cream to whips. Yeah, that could be another title of a book.
You know, you have friends out there watching right now that are going to slap you, and I'll tell you why.
Why is that?
Because everything that you just described, I asked you about the leather community, and everything you just described about the leather community, you referred to men, but I happen to know that some of the most influential people in your leather journey are leather women.
Oh, of course.
So, well, tell us about that.
Well, I've met a lot of powerful leather women. I guess the first person that brought me and introduced me to the leather community, the first person that flogged me was a woman. That's Sandy Reinhardt, Mama Sandy Reinhardt.
See, I knew about her. I haven't met her, but I knew about her, and I know she's very well respected.
So very well respected.
We cannot not mention her. I got your back. I got your back.
Got your back, Mama.
But I'm not going to flog it. Speaking of flogging, what is flogging?
Flogging is taking an apparatus.
Oh, I think you have one.
I have one.
He brought props. He brought props.
Now, see, all floggers are not created equally. This is a leather flogger that is more of a thud. People like to call it thud. It's kind of a beginner's flogger. You can take it and use as much force as you like, and all you really get out of it is a thud. And I know that most of my play party people are beginners, and I really enjoy spending time playing with beginners because their excitement is so authentic, and their expectations is just all over the place. And you take someone who's new to leather or leather sex, you present them with the flogger and maybe a blindfold. You have them dressed in a harness.
Let me see the blindfold. Let me put it on.
Okay.
Just for a moment.
Sure.
The camera's not on you right now.
Okay.
It's on me. So this is a blindfold,
mm-hmm.
and it's got leather on it.
Mm-hmm.
And there I am. Do you ever sleep in this?
Actually, it gets slept in a lot more hours than it does get played in.
Okay, here you go. All right.
So you have those kind of toys, and then you can include a harness.
And by the way, Joseph Cannon, he's a great actor. Joseph is spelled Josef.
Mm-hmm.
Cannon, Cannon. So Google him. But Joseph says, it does scare. Had a woman wanted to tie me up and spank with whips, as you may guess, I didn't call her back. And when you held up the flogger, he said that's exactly what she had.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so what else have you brought?
So then you have a nice leather jockstrap, studded jockstrap. Now you have to remember,
is this yours?
Well, of course.
Okay, so I'm going to get kinky. Watch this. You keep it rather clean. It smells very neutral. How do you manage that?
Well, you know what? When you have people trying things on,
I hope I don't lose any advertisers because I just actually smelled someone's leather jockstrap on live television.
Well, see, that's what happens with people who are vanilla and they start to associate with leather people. There's a curiosity there that we all have.
I'm not vanilla, but my experience is I just haven't had the right person indoctrinate me. And people ask me, why are you single? You already know my answer. Do you remember it?
No.
There are only two tops in California, and I haven't met one of them yet.
There you go. So you have that. And then you have, this has many names. Different people call it a cover, a surcap, a cap, a mirror cap, whatever your choice is.
Am I breaking any leather law if I put it on?
No.
All right, may I?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, people. I'm putting on the leather cap.
Now, you have to do this just right. You know, it's so funny because people say to me, Cliff, you know, you're so much nicer than I thought you were. You're so friendly. You're so gentle. And I often think, you know, what would make you think that I wasn't? And sometimes when I, you know, I'm 6'4" and I'm fairly muscular, but somehow when I put on a pair of dark glasses.
You're muscular? I would never have noticed.
And I put on a hat. Somehow my image changes, and I don't see a change. It's just me with sunglasses and my surcap.
Well, it completely changes, and that's a good time for me to swivel over and look at this cover of the magazine. You know, that was one of the more edgy covers of Desert Outlook that I've seen. I think you helped raise the kink standard in local media.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't want to...
Rob Laveau, by the way, was the photographer. And
fantastic. He's brilliant. I don't want to forget to ask you this. So, as a man of color, growing up, what were your thoughts about the issue of homosexuality, and how were your attitudes formed around it, and did that challenge your coming out process?
No, because in order to have that, I grew up in Oxnard, which is, although a very racially balanced community, my upbringing wasn't around a strictly black church or black neighborhood. So my homo lessons and fears and prejudices were very neutral, racially neutral. You know, the church didn't have an influence on me. It was more just neighborhood kids and, you know, babysitters and adults you hear talking. And then seeing gay people and not being able to relate to that aspect of the community. So,
David Walgan says, great to see you both. He's our, I know him from the gym. Who knows where you know him from? David, you want to confess? And Lil Wayne says, you're rocking it. So we have an interactive audience. How did you, all right, we sort of understand how you came out. How did you come out and discover your inner leather man?
Well, like I said, once again, going back to the earliest leather images was the leather man and the Village People. And somehow when that lineup would appear, my eyes would always drift to the leather guy. I just found his hyper-masculine imagery was just something I totally could relate to. So one of the very first boyfriends was also in the leather community, and then he took me to the leather bars. And although I was very intimidated by some of the gentlemen, I was also intrigued and wanted to be a part of it. You know what I mean? It's like the fear, but you don't go away kind of thing, and it drew me in closer and closer. And so I started picking up different leather pieces of, you know, attire, and I learned some of the games that they play and some of the, you know, the ways they express emotion that I kind of fit in. And I think the part that kept me there is probably the work they do with just the community, the outreach, the brotherhood, the taking care of one another.
Well, you know, I have to say that historically there's two groups of people among many that were extremely influential in raising money in the fight against HIV and AIDS, and we have the leather community and we have the drag community.
Right.
And sort of a group that crosses over to both of those in certain ways are the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. So there's all sorts of rich history about first responders to the HIV AIDS crisis. And one of the things that have we gone through all your props, the leather, the pieces of leather that we've
Well, got? You know, the only other thing I have are just my journey through the contest, because leather the leather leather contestants and leather title holders are not a direct link to leather sex and leather lifestyles. It's almost two types of preparation. All leather title holders are not involved in kinky, well, I shouldn't say not involved. They're not involved in heavy leather play. And all heavy leather play people are not necessarily involved with the bar scene or title holders. However, the one group, say title holders, are an ambassador to the leather community as a whole. But as a whole, they don't participate in all aspects of it. For example, for me, when I was going to the leather preparation, because a year before I actually entered the contest, I prepared. I got to the gym. I was starting to work out because I wanted to be the image I wanted to see on stage. So I started reading up on a lot of books. Ties That Bind, The Leather Contest.
Hold them up a little bit more slowly.
Okay. Okay. Ties That Bind.
Okay.
By Guy Baldwin.
All right.
Guy Baldwin also wrote The Leather Contest Guide. This is a real good book if you're interested in entering a leather contest.
Okay.
This book is called Leather Sex Question and Answers by Joseph.
I'll take that one.
And the gentleman that actually started the whole leather contest scene is Chuck Winslow. He's the owner of the International Mr. Leather Contest. So those books and, you know, different DVDs that I had watched helped me prepare for the leather contest, as well as gave me a background on a lot of the leather
community's history.
There's another
big history. Book down.
Yeah, there's another large book here. This actually is a book.
I want the big one.
This book is the 25th anniversary of the International Mr. Leather Contest.
Do you want to open that and show some of the pictures that interest you?
Oh, let's see. Yeah, I mean, I've met a few of these guys, but I did, now that you mentioned, I should have marked a page.
That's all right. Oh, that was an interesting shot. Turn the page, one, I think it's one page over. Just that one. Show that page.
You know, a lot of the people who won leather contests back in the early years were of the model, you know, it was quite a physique contest because originally the whole concept.
What? Hold that up again.
The whole idea, the whole concept was to bring men to the leather contest.
I want to ask.
The leather bars, I should say.
I want to ask your opinion. So. Mm-hmm. Seeing a man's open armpit like that, for me, is very sexy.
Yes, it is.
There's something that's incredibly sexy about a man in that pose, and I was wondering why you think that is.
Well, because
is that true for you, and why?
Yeah,
you think
and
that
I think it's true for all gay men. You know, we're attracted to hormones. We're attracted to
pheromones,
and so your armpit and your sweat carries that. I mean, I've met men who say, oh, my God, I can't stand it when a man stinks. And I say, okay.
Listen, I'm going to stop you. If you go to Clifton Tatum's Facebook page and you look through the photos, there's one where he has both of his arms up and two guys have their faces in his armpits in that photo. And it is on Facebook, as are we right now.
Yes, yes, yes. It's all about good times.
You know, you've raised the bar high for my future guests with your props.
That's good. Now, this gentleman here is Lenny Broberg. Lenny Broberg is also a champion in the leather community.
Hold it closer to the camera.
Lenny Broberg, he has continually...
Okay, move back.
He has continually emceed Mr. Palm Springs Leather Contest.
Pause for a second because... we've lost a signal and it's reconnecting. I'm sure that it will succeed, but the people on the radio are still hearing us.
Okay, so Lenny Broberg.
No, just be quiet though, because I want the video to reconnect, and it hasn't yet, so it's still trying, and I do not know why. So
maybe you just have so many hits you've blown your system, huh?
No, we're still on, so bear with me. Still trying to reconnect. Let's see if it does, because that means we're still in the same feed. I want to thank the radio listeners for bearing with us. Hopefully this will reconnect. Oh, we've reconnected. Yes, thank you. We've reconnected. So continue.
No, I was just saying Lenny Broberg, who has been Mr. International Leather also, and a San Francisco PD officer has been a major hit with Palm Springs because he has always emceed our Mr. Palm Springs Leather Contest. And speaking on the Mr. Palm Springs Leather Contest, the 2017 contestant and contest will be coming up real soon here. If you go to the Palm Springs Leather Pride website, you can purchase tickets.
The address is desertleatherpride.com, and it's October 27th through 30th, 2016, and all of the information is there. So let's return. By the way, if you're watching, I've set up my phone to function and the space to function as a three-camera studio. So that's camera one. This is camera two. This is camera three. And guess what? I have a camera four where I go like this. And Clifton, you're going to be able to see the shot on camera four. There. All right. So anyway, Joseph says, great show and guests. Very proud of you both and happy that a man of color shares his story. Though I'm straight, I grew up with a lesbian mother and how she had to hide her lifestyle, and it hurt to witness her not able to live her truth. So I celebrate all who can. Bravo.
Yes.
All right.
So back on the contest, we're also going to be looking for contestants for the 2017 contest. So you can contact your local bar, Mr. Toolshed Leather. We'll be looking for contestants at the Toolshed Bar. Mr. Barracks Leather Contest will be held at the Barracks Bar. You can contact those two. Also, if you're interested and you're a part of the leather community and in business, and you'd like to sponsor someone, you may do that as well. But you can run all those questions past that website, Desert Leather Pride, Palm Springs Leather Pride.
It's desertleatherpride.com.
Desertleatherpride.com. Contact them, ask questions if you're interested in either being a contestant or being a sponsor of a contestant. So back on my leather contestant journey,
yes,
I know I'm all over the place here.
Right.
It started off as Mr. Toolshed 2015.
Okay.
And then I went on to win Mr. Palm Springs Leather. And there I got a nice...
By the way, just a second. I'll show the sash in a second. But if you go to YouTube and you search Nicholas Snow Clifton Tatum on YouTube, you'll find a video of Clifton being crowned winner at that event.
Okay. Then you get a nice sash, but you have to give it back. I was fortunate enough that the club that sponsors the contest to actually give me the sash for the work I did for our community. And then finally, if you decide to go all the way to IML, then you'll also receive all the contestants at IML that show up.
Which stands for International Mr. Leather.
International Mr. Leather. Now, one of the reasons why I got to keep my particular sash and they kind of retired it is because of the amount of money I raised. I raised over $20,000 during my title year, which is pretty significant.
It's sort of unprecedented, I imagine.
Yeah, the last highest number was, I believe, just under $7,000 or right about $7,000. So I worked pretty hard and was in the public's eye. And the community responded. That's what was the most significant. I mean, many, many contestants get out there and do things throughout, you know, the world. But in my community, they kind of connected with my passion. And my passion was because I spent my whole life working with young people incarcerated. Well, you know, when you work in situations like that and you meet so many hundreds of thousands of kids and you think just small things teetered their life one way or the other, I thought, what could I do to give back? So I started exploring charities that I wanted to raise money for and bring recognition to. And I couldn't just stop at one because for me there were so many things that it takes to raise a healthy kid. So I worked with a variety of charities. The Trevor Project was one. Sanctuary Palm Springs in Palm Springs is two. For the Children was another one here in Palm Springs. The American Foundation for Suicide Prevention and the LGBT Center. They're a program that helps kids in school identify kids who are on the brink of suicide, as well as anti-bullying project.
I'm going to flip over, Clifton, to a photo gallery on your Facebook page that is about your reign, and maybe that will inspire also things for you to talk about. So we have the Outlook cover. How did that come about?
Well, that was interesting because when I first won the title, the Outlook was interested in doing a story, but because so many things were happening, I missed the email. And then my reign started, and I started doing things all over town. I had raised several $1,000s, and they came back to me and said, we still have to do that story. Well, I think I had a lot more to talk about. I had made a lot more of connections with the community. And I think what happened is I went from having just a small inside story to a larger cover story.
Then you ended up in an advertising campaign for Palm Springs Tourism.
Yeah. Well,
Bella DeBall. I know Bella DeBall is standing next to you.
That was a lot of fun. That Steve Harris sitting there in the reclining chair had asked if I would like to be in the interview or in the shot, and I said sure. And when Bella DeBall and I had met several times, so we were three people that were very involved in the community. That poster there was one of my first events that I hosted. It was the roast of Chris Reese. Chris Reese was the owner of Toolshed Bar, and John Gotti was the new owner. So it was a retirement and a welcoming at the same time. But what made that unique was that I invited all the past title holders I could drum up in our community to sell off their jock straps. And in addition, with the jock strap, you would get a basket of goodies. So there lies the offer. And it's so funny.
So what was the highest bid for?
Probably a couple hundred dollars.
That actually sounds like a good deal because doesn't the jock strap alone cost close to that?
Well, no. These weren't leather jocks. But it was a good deal because these leathermen, title holders, had brought in hundreds of dollars in their baskets.
Were the jock straps worn?
The jock straps, the highest bidder got to take the jock strap off the title holder on stage. Of course, we held up a towel. So
very discreet. Okay.
Yeah. That's a listing of all the charities. I took that poster around with me and kind of got the word out in the community. And what was nice about getting the word out in the community was there were many occasions where I'd be at a bar, nightclub, or even in the casino where people walked up to me and just handed me cash. I would always take the cash and put it in a separate pocket.
So you didn't accidentally spend
it. Yeah, exactly. Because here you are handing me cash in a casino and a bar, saying, oh, this is for the children. I'm going, okay, well, let me put it in the children pocket because I don't want to get confused with my drinking funds.
Let's jump ahead because I know this time goes by and we've been on 45 minutes, believe it or not. I want to wrap it up in the next 15. By the way, Love Jones says, so handsome. Do you know Love personally?
I've met him.
Well, seems like there's a story there. The way you kind of that stumbled out of your mouth. Well, Love Jones says very handsome. So you won in the Palm Springs, which means that you are qualified to go to IML, International Mr. Leather. And tell us about that experience, like from getting on the plane and what and the highlights to returning to
Palm Springs. Leo Newcomb went as he's my best friend. So he went there, but he also was my handler. And that handler is a person basically who kind of keeps you on schedule. The preparation for the contest was a board of title holders and leather members in the community that got together and kind of reviewed my attire, reviewed my body language, they reviewed my speech. Just kind of everything. They asked me questions impromptu. They asked me funny questions. They were just kind of prepared me for the whole IML judging aspect. From the time you get on a plane to go to Chicago for the contest, the judging starts because you don't know who the judges know. You don't know who the judges are friends with.
You don't know if they're on your plane.
Well, you'll know the judges' faces because they do let you know who the judges are. But anything you do, off kilter, off color, lack thereof, which brings pride to the leather community, will be reported. I saw Cliff on the plane, and he had one drink too many, and he was acting quite And he was disrespectful. This is not something that happened. This is an example.
So the contest starts once you show up at the airport. You leave your house, you are being judged. It's so funny.
Well, isn't that true everywhere?
It is true everywhere, but this is a contest.
I know.
And so, you know, there were 52 of us all wanting one title. Number two and number three, who you'd think would be ecstatic of getting two and three, wanted number one. And it's so funny because everyone has a story about why they think they didn't get the number one title. And, you know, and when it's all said and done, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, so there were two rounds, though,
yes,
of judging, and
yes,
you scored number one?
Yes. All right, so the first round was an interview before the judge panel. There was eight judges.
Okay.
And you're in there for about 8 minutes, and they ask you a series of questions. The second part of that contest, which is Saturday night, is to go on stage and a jockstrap and ask an impromptu funny question. The question comes from your application. So the most important thing, the best advice I can give anyone who's going to enter a leather contest is be an expert on yourself. And what I mean by that, know your history, know your values, know your morals, know everything you need to know about yourself. Because when you're asked a question, what's your opinion on, you need to be able to respond honestly, with integrity and truthfulness. Because if you stammer and stammer and you're trying to come up with an answer that you think they want to hear, you're not living your truth. And they can sense that. And when you have 52 to 69 contestants and competitors, they're looking for the person whom they think can represent the leather community that year the best. And if you're faking in that 8 minutes, you're not representing yourself or the leather community.
I have to stop you because you know what the theme is about the story you've told?
What's that?
The emergence of your authentic self. Seriously, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And that's one of my goals, to inspire people to allow their authentic self to emerge and be expressed and actualized.
Yeah.
And you help convey that message in so many ways in your life, your action, in your deeds, and your philanthropy continues.
Yeah.
What are you doing next? You have a big event coming up. I mean, it's not an event, but you've launched another fundraising initiative.
Yes, I have. I decided to take a break because I fell right out of the title and I was going right back into doing work. And I thought, hold on, in order for this to continue to be fun, I need to get a little downtime and take care of me and get my own life in order, and then pick it up again and kind of downsize it quite a bit because I was raising money for five charities, and each charity ultimately got over $4,000 each. That was a lot of work, not just for me, but for the community as a whole. I had over 80-some-odd volunteers help me out during my title year, and some of those people volunteered more than one time. So I thought, the next time I do this, I'm going to try and make it a one-man operation, but that means downsizing a lot.
Okay, do you have anything you want to promote?
I just wanted to promote
We have time.
The next leather event that's coming up.
Okay.
And I do want to thank a lot of the media who helped me out. Chris Green, whom you showed your cover for,
and his photos are the lead image in the embed of this at promohomo.tv are photos by Chris Green, and his name is, of course, listed there as well.
Yes.
We love Chris.
And I just want to thank all the media outlets that helped move my title year along.
Yeah, I guess I did the first worldwide interview with
you. Yes, you did.
That got picked up by the Huffington Post.
Got picked up by the Huffington Post.
Yeah, the title of that was The Leatherman Exposes Himself, and the title of this one is The Leatherman Exposes Himself Again.
And I have to admit that I did one exposure that I did not know was going to reach so many people. On my 57th birthday, I did a little dance, you know, and I see your face light up. And I thought maybe 40 or 50 of my friends and relatives may see it and comment. But the thing went, I think it went worldwide with 65,000 views. So, yeah, I want to thank you for exposing me, Nicholas, but I did have a little hand in that myself.
No, I understand that, but that I believe I'm actually, you didn't realize that I could actually go to this video and play it.
No, yeah.
I can, actually. You don't want me to, though.
No, go ahead.
So when I go to my Facebook, there it is, videos. I'm going to click on videos. I'm going to Clifton Tatum. I'm clicking on videos. And this is that it? Is that
no,
it?
That's it there.
This is it. Okay, so Clifton Tatum, I saw this when it came out.
I was told a leather man never dances.
We're showing it. How long is it?
It's 3 minutes long.
Okay, here we go. Jump ahead.
Inhibition you possibly could have. You're on stage in front of hundreds of people in a contest. You're doing events in nearly nothing but a jock strap. You're raising money and you're being asked all, I can't tell you the number of questions I get on in my messenger box. I get marital advice, gay relationship advice, leather questions.
You get the advice or they're asking?
I'm sorry. I mean, I'm giving advice on all these aspects of relationships, of leather, sex. I mean, I've had to go to doctors to get clarification about the sterility of urine and all these other kinds of things that people ask. They're kinky questions, and they feel comfortable because they see me as someone comfortable talking about it.
Now, you mentioned the sterility.
And non-judgmental.
I understand. You mentioned the sterility of urine, and people are going to wonder, well, what does that mean? Well, there is something in the leather and BDSM community called water sport,
yeah,
which
piss play.
Piss play. Well, you can use your imagination from there. That we wouldn't. We haven't talked about anything or shown anything that's inappropriate for Facebook. All right. So I mentioned during this interview that my experience is vanilla, but my desires aren't. What's your advice for me?
Oh, I easy. You find yourself a nice leather man who is open to kind of holding your hand and taking you along a nice, safe, comfortable journey.
Okay, so how does the leather experience differ from sex, if and when it does?
Okay, well, one thing I want to say is leather and sex,
they're different.
They're
things.
Very different. A lot of people involved in leather sex don't necessarily involve themselves with genital penetration. So you'll find people who are into bondage. You'll find people who are into puppy play. You'll find people that are into different forms of masochism that doesn't involve necessarily their genitalia or sexual arousal, but it falls under the leather sex. Now, some people like to have sex, but they'll be wearing different aspects of leather. They might like wearing a leather jog strap. They might like wearing harnesses or cuffs and engage in sex. But all sex and leather don't necessarily go together. When I say sex, I'm talking about genital play.
I understand.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I want to that I want you to do, Clifton, is I want you to think about your final comments. And while you think about what you want to say, I'm going to speak a little bit to the audience. So as you can tell, this has been a very fascinating episode, and I will have Clifton Tatum back. I did have one person call in, but I wasn't watching the studio. I got so engaged in my conversation with Clifton that I didn't see you, Dave, when you called in, but thank you for trying. And as you noticed, I have been acknowledging all of your comments under the video, and there's several ways that you can be alerted when I go on the air. The best way right now is to go to Facebook and to go to my personal Facebook profile, and you don't have to friend me there, but hit the follow button. You can also, and by the way, the URL for my personal Facebook profile is facebook.com/therealNicholasSnow. I have a fan page as well. And once Facebook gives me that blue check mark that you have that it verifies that I am Nicholas Snow, the real one, then I'll start originating my videos from that page instead. So you want to like that as well. All of the videos end up showing up at promohomo.tv over time. And on my personal profile, if you look into photos and then albums and then the video album, there's over 75 videos there. And, of course, on promo on Instagram and Facebook, I'm on Promohomo TV. That's my, Instagram and Twitter, Promohomo TV. And I really want to thank you because this is my second week of broadcasting. And this format, and as you can see, in just a week, actually, this is the 1 week anniversary of launching my show. I launched it a week ago today. But Clifton, you have a hilarious story. You're going to know what it is in a minute. And I just thought of this, but so right within days of Facebook finally enabling live stream on the Android phones,
right?
They had the white party.
Yes.
And I had media credentials to the white party, and I broadcast the white party arrivals, and I broadcast lots and lots of events. And tell them what happened.
Well, the night at the white party, I was in bed with my boyfriend, and we were watching your broadcast, which is a great way to enjoy the white party when you don't feel like, you know, being in the crowd. And we were sitting there my boyfriend was sitting there with the iPad in his lap. And I was kind of leaning over watching, and all of a sudden Nicholas Snow says, "Oh, I see Clifton Tatum has joined us." My boyfriend said, yelled, "He can see us," and threw the iPod in the air. And I, for a second, I looked at him, I couldn't figure out why he said that, and I started laughing. I go, "Oh, no, he can't see us. He just knows we logged on to his show, because he threw the iPad in the air." In panic, which I thought was adorable, and I had to tell you that you are affecting your community, and you have no idea.
Well, thank you so much. Before I actually get to you for your last remark, I just want to see if we're running out of radio time. No, we're not yet. So one of the things that I figured out in producing this show over the last week is how to create an exciting, vibrant visual experience for my Facebook viewers. That was, Joshua McCray says, "Great show, Nicholas. I listened, learned, and laughed. Thank you."
Great.
I wanted to work in this space to create something that was visually interesting but also had meaning and related to the content of the show. So behind me you see stacks of 3/4-inch video tapes. Those video formats are outdated. But over here is a machine that I'm going to be using to digitize all of these. This is my television show, Tinseltown's Queer, which I produced for 7 years in the 1990s. It was available to up to 600,000 households on a regular basis in the L.A. metropolitan area. I described it as a Queens version of Larry King. And now I've come full circle because what I've been able to do with you, Clifton, is I've been able to do an hour-long Larry King-style, fascinating interview. In my opinion, you're fascinating, and I can tell by the audience engagement that they're fascinated. So there's clearly a lot more to come here on promohomo.tv. If you do see this today on June 1st, 2016, from the Steve Chase Humanitarian Awards Facebook page, I'm doing pre-show coverage of the Queen of the Desert contest tonight. And then during the show itself, I'll be broadcasting portions of the Queen of the Desert competition on my promohomo.tv channel. And that's all I wanted to add about what I'm up to. I want to thank you so much, Clifton, for our friendship. I've learned a lot from you. I've written about some of the ways that you've profoundly and experienced me. I used to be afraid of you at the gym, and now we're friends, and I actually go to the gym on a regular basis and have results to show from it. Didn't you say I was cocky? Didn't you call me cocky once? Yes.
No.
All right.
You were in the shower, as I said.
Oh, well. At any rate.
Don't get bashful now.
Okay. So on that note, I'm actually not going to say anything else in this show. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let you have the last word, and then I'm going to pan over and wrap it up. So Clifton Tatum, the last word is yours.
Well, once again, I want to thank Palm Springs and the Palm Springs Leather community. I moved here in 2012, 2013. I was asked to do a contest. I said, well, let me check it out. 2014, I said yes, and I spent the whole time getting in the best shape of my life. Didn't know hardly a soul here. I knew a few people. And then I said I was raising money for charity for young people, and out of the woodwork, people were responding and helping and were there for me. I have to admit, I had to ask. I didn't just show up and stand there. I had to ask people, will they support me in raising money for charity? And I promised them a good time at the bar, a good sexy time, and we had some phenomenal sexy times. People from all aspects showed up. Straight people showed up. Gay people showed up. Leather people showed up. And I just want to thank you. That introduction, and I wasn't, you know, a bona fide leather specialist, but it was also a learning experience for me. So I want to encourage new people who are interested in doing leather contests to come on out, check out the community, read about the history. If it's something you think you can do and be authentic at, enter the contest. And that can also be your stepping stone into knowing people and getting to meet people in Palm Springs. And it can be a phenomenal experience. So just thank you, Palm Springs. Thank you, Palm Springs Leather Order of the Desert. Thank you, Leather Pride. Thank you, IML. It's been a phenomenal way. It's been my prom, my debutante prom, and my way to meet the community. And I've made a lot of great friends. That's all I can say.
I'm very grateful to be among them. Thank you for your service to the community. The theme of this show is connecting the circuitry of humanity. We've done that today.
For all of our upcoming programs, social media links, and a link to all of our advertisers, visit promohomo.tv. Until next time, I'm Nicholas Snow.
Now we're wrapping up the radio broadcast as well. I want to thank everybody that was tuning in to the radio broadcast. And Clifton, thank you again.
Well, thank
you're spectacular.
Nicholas.